Hi.
New York, New York. 10036. Pro country.
What you see is what you get.
Hell has no fury. He drives the most expensive car because second best never enters his mind.
Of all the billions of planets in space, only one is off limits to man.
It all began with a curse.
The evil you did this day will be avenged.
A curse.
From the mists of infinity, they come, rising from the cold, damp earth to take what is now theirs.
You are in a room filled with your friends, but they are all dead.
Night, when the earth is quiet and the good people of the world are sleeping, the night visitor comes to call.
The streets have been taken over by thieves, dope addicts, rapists, muggers. We live in fear. One man is doing something about it.
These are the sounds of 6 feet of silver death.
Grindhouse Purgatory, 42nd Street, Pete.
You're in Purgatory, a Grindhouse Purgatory. Pete Chirilla is back. And tonight, we're going to look at how grindhouse movies played on television. Pete, you saw these movies in the grindhouses. Was it different seeing them on some low-budget UHF station at 4 in the morning?
Yeah, because they were all edited, most of them.
I'm from a different generation as you.
Yeah.
And it's weird. Like, when I watch a Hammer film, it doesn't seem like a Hammer film anymore, unless it's full frame, mono sound, and scratched up. I saw almost all of the Peter Cushing, Christopher Lee Dracula movies on UHF television. I didn't know there was nudity in these movies until years later. And yet it still didn't wreck my enjoyment of seeing these on, you know, a fuzzy 3 a.m. broadcast.
Well, that's the whole thing. If that's the first time you see them, that's your earliest memory of them. I mean, I saw a film, a dinosaur film, when I was a kid called Unknown Island, and I had black and white TV, and I had no idea that fucking film was in color because it was shot, I think, in 1949. So it's just almost the same perception, you know?
No, some of the grindhouse stuff moved into cable more than it did UHF, but I've heard you talk on your old show before about how you would like work at a gas station or whatnot and just watching UHF television all night, and that's how you would see the older movies that were from before your generation that would have been grindhouse movies, correct?
Oh yeah. It was stuff was being sold to television. There's a whole progression of this thing because, you know, television used to only go to a certain point and cut off. Like when I was growing up, it was 1 o'clock in the morning. You'd have the late show, which would go on 11:30, and then, you know, it hit 1 o'clock, 90 minutes, sermonette, Star Spangled Banner, and then fucking Test Pattern. Well, as things progressed, these guys started stepping over a little bit, you know, where they were going on later at night, and they needed filler for that, you know, time slot, because there was nothing, you know, there was no extra programming back then. Don't forget, TV was just getting into high gear back then. So all of a sudden, these spaghetti westerns like Minnesota Clay and Gunfighters at Casa Grande would show up. Some weird West German horror stuff with Kinski, you know, the Edgar Wallace, Brian Wallace stuff. A lot of the AIP stuff that was re-edited for television. So I stay up a lot and, you know, see this stuff. But the thing is with me, I got some kind of an idiot savant where I remember fucking shit in movies. And when they started airing stuff like the Dollars Trilogy and Wild Bunch and all that other stuff on regular television, that stuff was cut to shit. So, you know, here we come with cable. And cable was real hot, you know, because, you know, uninterrupted, you could have all this wonderful shit in your house. But they also lacked what the TV stations, you know, I was just talking about, lacked late night filler. So you always had Assault on Precinct 13, The Boogans, Silent Scream, Blood Beach, and a bunch of stuff like that. It's like late night filler that would bleed over into like the regular programming. It's like secondary programming during the day or early evening.
Oh yeah, HBO wasn't even 24 hours until 1980.
Yeah.
Before that, HBO only ran 12 hours a day. And you would think it would make sense, even if you had limited programming, you run for 12 hours and then you run that same 12 hours again, right?
Yeah, right.
Wouldn't that make sense? But that's not the way it happened. Even HBO, a channel you were paying for, would go off the air. But, like, because what a lot of people don't realize is why a lot of these grindhouse movies and the AIP stuff and the Corman stuff and the blaxploitation and all that, why these stations would run these. Because, see, you would buy packages at the time. You know, they might want the Dollars trilogy because Clint Eastwood's becoming a big name now. They might want, you know, some of the movies that now have big stars in them and whatnot. But you couldn't just buy Fistful of Dollars. You had to buy everything. They would be like, well, if you want these three movies, you also have to buy these nine movies, which might be like Soul Brothers of Kung Fu, Alien Contamination, The Humanoid, things like that. So they had these movies, and it was, well, we paid for them. Might as well run them. So they run them late at night, and then they would all of a sudden find, holy shit, they're getting really good ratings. Why? They couldn't figure that out. So these movies, in a lot of cases, the ones we're talking about, Pete, are ones that UHF stations didn't want. And they just ran them for the sake of running them and then found that there was an audience.
Well, why do you think HBO started their own horror series then? They knew what was going on. They tapped into that whole Tales from the Crypt thing. They tapped into it.
Well, but then, you know, cable, it was different because even though, like, you know, leave pay cable out for a moment, stuff like A&E, they could get away with a lot more, and some of the other early cable channels, they could show these movies relatively uncut with relatively few commercials. I remember the first time I ever saw THX 1138, it still had the nudity in it, and it was on A&E. I remember an old mid-80s A&E broadcast of THX. That was the first time I ever saw that movie.
Yeah, I think A&E also ran Monty Python and the Holy Grail uncut before anybody else would touch it.
I believe so. And I remember when A&E ran the Max Headroom series, the TV series. They ran the British prints where they said shit. And I thought that was groundbreaking because I remembered that to be a network show. So I'm like, whoa, Edison just said shit? I never saw that before.
Yeah, there was something else. There was a couple other things they ran that were like not their norm, that were a little bit more hardcore than usual. I can't remember the fucking things now.
I once saw the William S. Burroughs movie Decoder on A&E. Can you imagine Decoder playing on television today?
No.
Nobody would play that fucking movie. And I saw that on cable. And then you had the HBO and the Movie Channel and Showtime and Cinemax. They made their – who the fuck watched Cinemax for a Die Hard movie? You watched it for Skinemax, didn't you?
Yeah. Well, I'm proud to say that I had cable for almost 10 years without paying for it. So
that was a whole nother thing. Tell people about that, because I never had bootleg cable.
No?
Because – you see – bootleg cable was so rampant that Z Channel, there's a documentary called Z Channel, A Magnificent Obsession. Z Channel actually beat HBO to the air by about 3 months. They were the first pay cable uncut channel. And Z Channel, they got a new owner in the early 80s. And they were being bootlegged so much that the cable installer came out to put Z Channel in the new owner's home. Didn't know who it was, and offered to hook him up to all the other cable channels for $50 without realizing that this was the guy who was about to turn him into the FBI.
That's pretty funny.
You know, so tell us a little bit about what bootlegging cable was like back then, because I've only heard the stories of these.
It was a box. That was a – see, the thing was, I didn't really give a shit about – you know, I was making decent money when cable was out, and I was married, and she was making decent money, so it really didn't affect us. What was killing me was the pay-per-views, because I was a big wrestling fan. So I'd buy all, you know, buy all the pay-per-views and shit. Like, I think it was like $30 a pop or $20 a pop. That starts to add up. So someone advertised a box for $350, gets everything, goes under your regular cable box. Your cable box goes into this. That goes out to the TV. Boop, 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 boop. I'm like, all right, fuck it. Well, I get this miserable-looking cigarette-burn-scarred piece of shit that I plug in and worked wonderfully for 7 years. I didn't pay for shit for 7 years.
Well,
just a descrambler box. That's all it was.
Well, yeah, because then there was the big thing about then HBO started scrambling their signals, and then the movie channel did it, and then the Playboy channel did it. And then it got so ridiculous with them being so afraid of cable piracy that you couldn't have just a box like that anymore. You had to have a box specifically for HBO's signal, a box specifically for Showtime's signal.
I was living in one part of Jersey, and I moved, and I took the box with me, and it didn't work up there because it was a whole different system. So I just fucking, you know, started talking some shit to some people. Finally, one of my customers in the video store says, oh, I can get you a brand new box, $200. Brought me this thing, hooked it up, and same thing. I had a wonderful 10-year run without paying for fucking cable.
Well, now, even on cable, you couldn't get porn for the most part. I mean, hardcore stuff.
You had
re-edits. Like, one of the great things about the Devlin Miss Jones DVD is, even though I don't know who would choose to watch this other than the curiosity, they have the movie channel version of it with all the penetration edited out.
Yeah. Well, I used to get certain adult companies used to issue cable version only on the X-rated stuff, which basically was no fucking and sucking in it. You know, you'd see the head go down, and they'd cut away to, like, you know, a fucking tree or something. So.
Yeah, and, you know, I get that there was a market for this because HBO, you know, wasn't authorized to show hardcore. Do you remember the relatively short-lived American Triple Ecstasy channel?
Nah.
They only lasted 6 years, and a lot of it was crap. Now, you guys got to put this into a 1984 context with the dollar amounts I'm about to give you. American Triple Ecstasy was hardcore movies, completely uncut. You had to have a special box. Your bootleg cable box wouldn't deal with this. And they ran until 1990. They would run uncut movies like Sex Crimes 2084, Bolero, Smoker, stuff like that. And they would be completely uncut for only $500 a year. In 1984 dollars, Pete, can you imagine people that would pay $500 a year just to be able to watch hardcore porn?
I wouldn't.
But I mean, there was that in 1984, the environment was right for that, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, don't forget, Al Goldstein had Midnight Blue, too.
Midnight Blue was public access, though.
Well, yeah, I know that, but I mean, he got away with a lot of shit on there.
That's because you can't censor public access at all. Public access is completely censorship free unless you're trying to sell something. The thing with public access is you can't make money off of it, so you can't sell anything. And so Al got away with a lot because you can't censor them. They cannot be censored at all. You know, the best that they can do is something like Midnight Blue or Great Satan at Large, they could say, okay, these are only going to be on, you know, from 3 until 4 in the morning or whatnot. Yeah. That's the best censorship that public access could do was your time slot might kill you. That's about it.
We got kicked off the air on – we did something with the old Uncle Floyd guys, and we got kicked off the air. I forget what for, being visibly drunk on camera. But that wasn't me. I wasn't visibly drunk.
You weren't allowed to commit a crime, so that might have been something that was illegal, and that might have been why. Because yeah, they could censor you if you were advocating or committing crimes.
I don't think I was advocating. I had to take my T-shirt off because it said something fucking foul on the front of it. I remember that.
Well, now last week we talked about the VHS bootlegging scene. Now, when I was a VHS bootlegger, and this may be different from your era, because again, we got about a decade of gap between yours and mine, is TV. TV was a big deal. a lot of the time, these movies that would not be available on video at all, the bootlegs would be TV versions. They would be the, you know, somebody found it off a 3 a.m. UHF showing, and that's the only print of it out there. Did you find that when you were watching TV that they had shit that no one else had? Like, you know, at 3 a.m, you're like, where did they find this fucking print?
Yeah, back in the day, like I said, you know, we didn't have nothing. So when all of a sudden they started extending the program into, you know, the wee hours of the morning, it was like, oh, wow, I never saw that fucking before. Because they'd use it for fucking filler. There was something with some of these really weird, twisted Italian black and white horror films. It might have been Dance Macabre. It might have been Castle of Evil, or the cut down versions of it. There was that thing, some French film where they were doing a face transplant. All kinds of weird fucked up shit. Something with a fucking dog walking through walls.
Yeah, late night TV. People who are too young can't understand what late night TV used to be like. Can they? Yeah. I mean,
no, you know, the whole thing was, you got to figure in the 70s. I used to hang out. I was working as a slash mechanic gas pumper till 11 o'clock at night. I walk across the street to the bar and get in trouble. But usually the way it went was about 11 o'clock. And, you know, I don't know if this was national or whatever. The Honeymooners came on, Honeymooners reruns. So we'd watch that. And then, I don't know, I think there was, you know, of course, Racing Results. We had to watch fucking Racing Results. And then whatever fucking weird ass movie was on until we got kicked out because the bars in Jersey had to close by 2 o'clock. So a lot of weird shit. But the other problem is sometimes you were so drunk and stoned, you really didn't know what the fuck you were looking at.
Which probably makes my next point even more relevant. There, like late 80s, late night television, whether it be UHF or syndicated stuff or whatnot, people can't believe a lot of this stuff existed. Like, do you remember GLOW, Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling?
Yeah, Stallone's mother was her outfit.
Yeah. Could you imagine GLOW ever coming from any time except the late 80s?
Oh,
late
no.
Night television? I mean, I masturbated so much to the GLOW girls.
Well, a couple of them actually went on to become real wrestlers.
See, I don't follow wrestling. I just knew that these were some pretty hot chicks rolling around in a really fake-looking ring and really bad comedy
There was a chick there named Tiffany Mellons, right?
I don't remember that one.
She went into fucking porn, and she was in her 40s when she went into porn. And then I think she's a bounty hunter now or something.
That's a strange career course, but
yeah,
fine.
Well, you know, you see something, you know, I don't know, if you're in trouble, you see something that hot, you know, coming towards you, you know, whether run or come, I don't know what the fuck you would do.
But I mean, like, you remember how weird late night television used to get.
Oh, yeah.
Especially, you would get the weird late night hellfire preachers on that would buy time and
oh, yeah.
Not, because this is one thing people don't realize. Yes, we all have infomercials nowadays, and infomercials have killed late night programming. But infomercials are called paid programming. You don't have to have an infomercial. Anybody can buy that time. So you would have these, you know, hellfire and brimstone type preachers that would buy a half hour at 3 a.m. on the UHF channels. And you would have this kind of shit you could not see anywhere else. Could you?
No, I told you this story about the Beatles bootlegs, right?
You might have told me, but I don't remember. You told me a lot of stories, so.
All right, well, there was an outfit in South Jersey called Video Warehouse, and he had all this supposed rights to this Beatle footage, which, of course, we all know he didn't. So I went down, and I said, I'm not going to fucking sell this shit. I don't need the fucking headaches. He took a fucking late-night infomercial spot on TV advertising the 4 Beatles tapes and a bunch of other shit that he should have never fucking opened his mouth about. And 2 weeks later, he was out of fucking business.
So somebody who owned the Beatles catalog at that time before Michael Jackson saw it?
Probably, but you know, you're doing something illegal, you know. Sometimes, you know, it doesn't pay to fucking put it on, you know, late-night fucking television, you know?
Well, when it comes to...
I've met a lot of dumb fucking crooks in my life, but that one took the cake, you know?
When it comes to late night movies, though, did you ever see stuff from your childhood? I mean, like, how did you just watch whatever happened to be on, or you're flipping channels at 3 a.m? Or did you do, I'm again younger than you, where I would scan the TV guide. You'd get the TV guide on Monday.
TV guide, yeah, TV guide. Oh,
you'd
wow.
Scan the TV guide and you'd be like, yeah. Oh, a Godzilla movie.
Shit, Wednesday night, 1:30, Attack of the Giant Leeches. Got to see that again. I'll make fucking coffee.
Yeah, you know, it's so weird for the modern audience with Netflix and everything on demand to understand that you would change your life schedule to be able to catch a movie at a specific time, wouldn't you?
I called in sick.
I had my dad call me in sick from school one night because Them was on at 3 a.m. I had never seen it before, and I wanted to see Them, the 1950s giant ant movie. And I'm like, Dad, I'm never going to get up for school. Please call me in. I want to. You would rearrange your life to watch these movies at 3 a.m.
I'll do you one better. I fucking called up the station and complained when they played the wrong movie that they advertised.
Little anal retentive there, Pete?
Well, I fucking went through the trouble to keep a fucking wake till 1 o'clock in the goddamn morning. And, you know, they advertised Voodoo Woman, which I really wanted to see. And they played Voodoo Man, which I had seen like 6 times already. So, yeah, I fucking felt that I was within my fucking rights to complain about this shit.
Did you get any response?
Yeah, they hung up on me.
Of course they did.
They usually do when, you know, a raving 14 or 16 year old drunk calls up 5 o'clock in the morning.
Because, as the VCR came in, if you could figure out how to program it, you just set your timer for it. Yeah. But again, there's just something about all the lights out in your house, the glow of the TV being the only illumination, sitting there with a microwave pizza and a Mountain Dew at 1 or 2 a.m. when you've got to go to school the next day, or you got to go to work or whatnot, watching some black and white movie. There's just something about that cannot be matched with Netflix, huh?
Yeah, no, we didn't have the luxury of a microwave back then either. Anything we had to do resolve with snacking made fucking noise, and you didn't want to do that because you'd wake up the parents.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. I always had cheap microwave pizzas.
Yeah.
That I had to stay up with mine.
Well, I always tried to take the TV furthest away from their fucking bedroom so I wouldn't get caught.
Well, that was the other thing. Did you ever do the whole you serotypically set your alarm after mom and dad are in bed, and then you would just have the volume down really low, and you would sit really close to the TV just to watch the movie, and mom and dad, so mom and dad would never know you got up and missed 3 hours of sleep?
No, because they pretty much snored a lot, so they drowned anything out.
Oh, because I remember sitting right next to the TV, having to listen to it really, really low because I wanted to catch some movie on a UHF station and whatnot. I didn't want
to
wake my...
I can remember setting the alarm clock for 3 o'clock in the morning one time to see something. I remember that.
That's just, I don't know. People might go, well, yeah, it's so much easier today with Netflix and on demand. But there's just something about the experience that they don't.
Yeah, well, you know, the whole experience wasn't readily available at your fingertips. You had to wait, and if you missed your fucking shot, you had to wait. You know, they do it again, but, you know, who knew how long down the road? I mean, certain shit ran, you know, there's a few movies I can remember that I've never, ever fucking seen again.
Oh, mm-hmm. I've seen movies on TV. I thankfully recorded them, but that still never got a VHS release. Never got a DVD release, and it's like they're a rights nightmare, so they're probably never going to, but I've got an old copy off of television. You know, those are the kind of things I was bootlegging when I was a bootlegger in the 90s. I was bootlegging the shit you could not get anywhere else. So I don't know if that set me apart from the other bootleggers or not. I don't know.
You know, the weird part was I had a deal with a couple of local video stores because they'd bring in, like, you know, let's say 5 copies of Die Hard. And they only needed 2 to rent, so they'd sell off the other 3. So I'd say, look, what are you paying for porn? And they hit me with some ridiculous figure. I'm like, I'll tell you what. I'll trade you a brand new porn for one of them. So, you know, fucking porn tapes only cost me $3, $4. So I could flip all this other shit for $10. And that was my walk-in crowd, you know. They wanted the new releases. Okay, we got 3 fucking diehards over there. Fight over them. Boom, boom, boom. That's it. So
it's really a different time. And that's what I think this show is all about. You relating to what a different time this all was.
Oh, yeah. It was more fun. I mean, I'm not knocking what anybody's doing today. It just seems mundane to sit home and stream shit and download shit. I mean, we had to go out and physically search the shit out, and it was fucking fun. I mean, you could fucking spend the day in Liquidators, you know, get there 7 o'clock when it opens, sitting there till noon, go around the corner, have fucking lunch, go back there and sit there at 5 o'clock, and you walk out with a fucking box of cool shit. That's what it was all about.
It's not the same.
No, I remember when I was a kid, I used to haunt these, I used to haunt these old fucking magazine and bookstores, and I wish the fuck I had saved some of this shit, because I had those fucking pulp science fiction books and those pulp Western books and shit. It's like, man, I look at this shit today and it's like it don't even hold a fucking candle, because people actually had to draw this shit back then, you know?
I know. So, Pete, you were never on television, you know, that people are going to see. But if they want to contact you, where would they do so?
I was on television once.
Once?
I think I was. Yeah.
There are no comments, huh?
No, I'm trying to fucking think. I know I was on something. Not something major, though. But something.
Well, where can people find you regardless?
Oh, 40deuce@hotmail.com, Facebook, I got an offer. You know, you're involved in this shit, so you would know what I'm talking about. You know, we call the show Grindhouse Purgatory based on the magazine that I self-published called Grindhouse Purgatory. Josh writes for the magazine. A lot of people don't know what it's all about, so I'm going to make this fantastic fucking once-in-a-lifetime offer here, as I have about 25 copies left of issue number 4, which was 100-and-something whopping fucking pages for a magazine. And that issue has an article written by none other than Gary Kent, stuntman, Hall of Famer, author, and actor. We got the Ted Michaels interview that nobody else got. And a little something by Carter Stevens and a bunch of, you know, weird, you know, twisted fucking reviews and, you know, overviews of films and shit. Josh is involved, a bunch of other people involved. So here's the deal. Let me take a sip of this water. You don't have to edit this out. I mean, I'm human. I fucking drink. You email me at 40deuce@hotmail.com, then I'll give you an address to PayPal me $5, which only covers the shipping and handling. The magazine has a cover price of $8. So, you know, I figured if you bought it for $8 and figure another $4 to ship the damn thing out, or $5 or whatever it is, you're up $13. So you get to preview this wonderful magazine for only $5. That covers the shipping, handling, and packaging. So you email me at 40deuce@hotmail.com and give me a little bit to get it out, because I'm not supposed to fucking drive for like a month. So I can get somebody to take me to the post office, but not every day. So there'll be snail coming, but you'll get it if you're interested. So, you know, I'm not going to twist anybody's arm, but a lot of people think it's a cool mag. And, you know, a lot of us, including Josh, put a lot of work into the fucking thing. So that's it.
This has been a 1201 Beyond production. Find it and other great content at 1201beyond.com.